Here at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting annual meeting in the Renewable Fuels Association booth, with me is Bob Dineen, who is president and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association. And Bob, it's always a pleasure to see you here, and I'm sure you're getting a lot of interviews done here with the farm broadcasters, and probably one of their main questions is, what's going to happen at the end of the year as far as ethanol is concerned, especially with what's going on in Washington?
I will tell you that the Super Committee has taken up all the oxygen out of Washington, D.C., and so anybody says with certainty that they know what's going to happen is spinning a yarn. But, at the end of this year, there will be changes. One of the most important is the ethanol tax incentive that has built this industry, that has provided the underpinning of public policy support that has allowed this industry to grow, goes away. And, every August, early September, I like to get out of the Washington, D.C. bubble and go out and talk to member companies. And so I toured Minnesota and Iowa and Illinois and was talking to companies all summer long. And I wanted to know from them, is this going to impact your bottom line? Are you concerned about it? And I'm proud of the response that I got, because every single one of them recognized that, you know what, the marketplace has changed. You're now looking at $85 to $100 a barrel of oil on a sustained basis. And in that kind of a situation, it's difficult to go to the taxpayer and say, we need to provide an incentive to a gasoline marketer to blend our product, when the marketplace is already providing that incentive. We're the lowest cost liquid transportation fuel in the world today. They also recognize policy has changed. You now have a renewable fuel standard that is providing the underpinning for demand. And the industry itself has changed. It's not your father's ethanol industry anymore. We are more efficient. We are utilizing new technologies. We are continuing to evolve this industry for new feedstocks. It's an exciting time to be in the industry, and it's time for the tax incentive to go away. I would like to see a little parity with tax policy, because while the ethanol industry has come forward and said, we recognize that this nation's economic health is in jeopardy, and we're going to do our part. We're going to step up. We're not going to fight to hang on to this tax incentive. Where's the oil industry? They are hanging on to their subsidies to their dying breath. And just as the ethanol industry doesn't need taxpayer incentives right now, tell me that an Exxon shareholder needs to have the taxpayer support to drill in the Gulf at $85 or today at $96 a barrel oil. You don't need that incentive. If Exxon doesn't have enough motivation to drill in the Gulf of Mexico at $96 a barrel oil, perhaps they shouldn't be doing it. So I hope at some point that Congress takes a look at all of these energy tax subsidies and decides to level the playing field.
Now, is there a difference between the oil subsidies and the ethanol, the renewable fuel subsidies, which have a sunset? Is there no sunset for some of the oil subsidies?
No, they're embedded in the tax code. They will go on for all eternity until somebody steps up and rips them out of the tax code. That's a much more difficult thing. We've had to go back to the taxpayer every couple of years and justify our incentives and demonstrate, look, this has been a good return on investment. We are 400,000 jobs. We've added $56 billion to gross domestic product. We are replacing 10% of the nation's liquid transportation fuels. We are repaying the taxpayer $7 for every dollar you invest. We've been able to do that every few years. Not once has the oil industry had to go back to the taxpayer and defend their incentives. They're embedded in the tax code. And they like to say, we don't have tax incentives that are just for us. Our tax incentives are available to any industry. Yeah, any industry that drills in the Gulf of Mexico, any industry that, extracts energy from other countries and has, big operations offshore that will pay no taxes whatsoever. So maybe it's time for a more thorough and fair reevaluation of energy tax policy.
One of the things that has been a big turnaround here in the ethanol industry this year is exports. We've seen our exports of ethanol greatly increase. Just talk about that a little bit. What do you think about the export possibilities for American ethanol?
Well, they're great, and they're going to continue to be there. And the reason for that is, ethanol is the lowest cost liquid transportation fuel in the world today. We're less expensive than Brazilian ethanol, Mr. Gore. We are less expensive than any other alternative fuel, Mr. Chu. So, I think that is going to be there. We actually exported in the month of September 106 million gallons of ethanol. more than half of that going to Brazil, the world's, by many accounts, leading producer of ethanol, although we produce twice as much of them at less cost. It's almost a shame, though, Cindy, that we have to export as much ethanol as we do today, because we'd like to be doing it here. The reason that that export market has become so important is because without it, we'd be shutting plants down, because there's no more ethanol we can blend into U.S. gasoline. And until that blend wall is overcome, with E15 being widely available, we're going to have to rely on that export market, and we will.
Okay, two things I want to hit on with that. First is the EPUR. The European ethanol producers have recently come out and said, and challenged the fact that we are exporting so much ethanol, and they're saying it's unfair. What is RFA's response?
Well, they've filed a petition for an investigation. Whether or not the EU goes forward with an investigation of anti-dumping or not is not yet certain. I suspect that they probably will. I know they will find no dumping. The European Union has encouraged ethanol imports through their own tariffs, and E90 pays a lower duty rate than any other fuel, including ethanol, if ethanol is just coming in by itself. They need to address that situation. I find it curious that EPUR has raised this issue right now when, in fact, the tax incentive is going away in 60 days. So to the extent that you were concerned that there was ethanol that was taking advantage of the tax incentive and being exported, that's not going to be an issue any longer. So I think this is just more about press than it is about anything else.
Well, and speaking of that, now, Brazil. We've seen Brazil has been wanting to get rid of that tariff for a long time. They all constantly challenge that and say that we should have a level playing field and all that stuff. Well, Brazil's been short on ethanol for the last couple of years, and they've been importing U.S. ethanol. So, I mean, there's a lot of talk about how we can use, once a tariff goes away, all this ethanol can come in from Brazil. How are they going to do that?
Well, they don't have ethanol to ship here for the most part. They will ship some because California has established a regulatory regime that advantages Brazilian ethanol over U.S. ethanol. So there may be shipments of Brazilian ethanol going to California, and that just means that more ships of U.S. ethanol is going to have to go to Brazil, which is not a very efficient marketplace, but is what California has set up. Okay, there's a deeper issue here because Brazil has whined for years about the trade distortion that has been our offsetting tax, our offsetting tariff, despite the fact that it has never prohibited a single gallon of ethanol coming into Brazil. It just has meant that U.S. taxpayers weren't adding additional subsidies on top of the subsidies that their product has already gotten, because it just the tariff just offset the tax benefit. But trade distortions come in very many ways. And over the last couple of months, Brazil, because they've seen how much U.S. ethanol is going to their country and has become uncomfortable with how much ethanol is being imported, decided, hey, we don't have enough of our own product. We don't really like importing all this corn ethanol. So we're going to lower our requirement from 25% to 18%. That took away a 35 million gallon a month market from U.S. producers. That was a very direct trade distortion. So I think Brazil now needs to level the playing field and truly create an open market and stop this nonsense where they are going to limit how much U.S. ethanol can be exported to Brazil. I can't wait for them to do that, because the absurdity is, as they have lowered their ethanol requirement, they also don't have more gasoline supply. So they're importing more expensive gasoline. So rather than take our least expensive ethanol, they want to import more expensive gasoline. It makes no sense.
We just had another crop report come out. Yeah, the corn crop's a little smaller than it was, but what do you think about the ability of our producers here in this country to continue to serve the needs of both food, feed, and fuel?
I have every confidence that the marketplace will respond, as it always has, and you will see a bumper-to-bumper crop next year. Look, this wasn't a great year for growing anything in this country. With the wet weather in the spring, a long, dry, hot summer, it burned up crops in Kansas. But we still have the fourth largest corn crop in history. And that's a testament to the productivity of the American farmer. That's a testament to technology today that allowed yields to be higher than some farmers might have expected. It's a testament to the commitment that U.S. farmers have made to make sure that we are producing adequate supplies of grain to meet our growing demand for food, for feed, for fiber, and for fuel. So I have every confidence that moving forward, we're going to be continuing to meet those markets.
All right. Thank you very much. Bob Dineen here at the NAFB Trade Talk. I'm Cindy Zimmerman.